Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Richard, I say data, you say data.
And some people say data, which sounds really pompous.
And is it plural or singular?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's call the whole thing up.
A lot of our recent shows have been about data or data, and its massive importance in our daily lives.
Yeah, especially in the medical world. Today, we're going to talk to a returning guest who's an emergency room physician and an expert in how medical data can be used in a clinical setting.
Interesting guy. Medical data, the promise and the pitfalls, Dr. Joe Habush.
And when I write a patient's chart, I might have to comment on that patient in a way that would be extremely helpful to other doctors taking care of
But you don't
patient.
Necessarily want them.
But I can't have them read it.
Slightly paranoid. Wouldn't it be great if we could have access to our medical records and share them with doctors, family members, and others in the world?
Yeah, that could reduce medical mistakes and unnecessary tests every time we go to a new hospital or find a different healthcare provider.
And hopefully better diagnoses, but there's a privacy and security. So it's a complicated question. We're going to get into all of this with Dr. Joe Habush, who's the CEO of MDCalc, a widely used online diagnostic tool.
He's also a specialist in emergency medicine at NYU Medical Center here in New York.
So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be back here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. So last time we talked a lot about data that is optimized for the physician. You run a company that helps organize this data for doctors in urgent situations. But what about patients and their access to data, and how will that change the doctor-patient relationship?
It's an exciting time. There's so much technology that will improve healthcare. Another big area is AI, artificial intelligence in medicine. You hear about this a lot. In my view, we've had improvements technologically in healthcare for years, for decades. And I don't see this technology in the way that it's getting marketed. In other words, it replacing what a physician does. I see it as helping a physician make better decisions. And one example I give of AI that was created 50 years ago, my parents immigrated here as physicians. And at that time, in the 60s, when they collected blood samples, one of their skills had to be to smear the blood sample and look under a microscope and count all the white cells in the high-powered field, and that was the white cell count. And that took maybe 5% of a resident's time. Now we have quote-unquote AI doing that. You put the blood in a machine, a bunch of buttons fly, and suddenly the CBC gets made. We don't have less physicians because of that. We just have more
efficient. They have more time to focus on the patient or get to the diagnosis.
Exactly. They can focus on other things, just like technology in any field.
So changes are coming all the time. Weeks ago, Apple introduced a feature for customers to see their medical records right on their iPhone. And this could bring together hospitals, clinics, along with the Apple app, so that consumers can see available medical data from not only their primary healthcare physician, but from multiple providers. That's a pretty big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. And it's a very smart play by Apple because it focuses in on a problem we in healthcare and in the tech of healthcare really know well. And that is the sharing of medical records across systems.
Which is a problem, right?
A huge problem. If you come and see me at the NYU emergency department, right, you're brought there, but your doctor is at Northwell, for example, totally different electronic health record. It's quite difficult for me to access your healthcare records. And that difficulty happens for a few different reasons. One is hospitals are not incentivized structurally and financially to share the records. So they're not trying to look for ways to make it easy. And number two is there's a lot of regulation, HIPAA, privacy, etc.
So there's some good reasons to restrict the completely free access to that data, but it becomes a hurdle for physicians.
Yes, that's exactly right. And there's some other good reasons as well, because patients who get worried about their medical care, who are on the...
You mean hypochondriacs, right?
Yeah, right. They will see their medical records and start getting worried. And this is already a problem in American healthcare. If you start searching for answers, there's a doctor who will give you an answer. They'll order that extra test, give you that extra treatment, which is, in the end, dangerous for a patient who doesn't need it and costly for the system.
So there's a problem here because very often it's frustrating for patients who go from one doctor to another. And because there isn't a sharing of these medical records, all of the questions they were asked by the previous doctor have to be answered again.
Yeah, and not just the questions, which are frustrating, but the exams, the MRIs. And maybe we just don't have information that could have made a difference at the right time.
Now, and you're an emergency room doctor, so you must see this come up in very urgent settings where you're trying to get the basics of some patient's history. You need to know if they have diabetes or something. Maybe there's a language barrier. What's it like?
Yeah, half of my job is being a detective. You just said it. I have to figure out how to get information from different kinds of people, from different walks of life. Some speak a different language. But also, if I could just access their records immediately, that would be a game changer.
It would be a game changer, but it sounds like there are both pros and cons to the sharing of medical records. Is there an answer? We're kind of impatient for solutions.
So one answer that a lot of health IT companies are using, including Apple, is that to get around the HIPAA regulations, that is a privacy law protecting health information of patients. So your information can be shared with you, it can be shared with your healthcare providers and your payers, and if you want it to go beyond that, you have to give permissions. There's a lot of extremely strict penalties when hospitals or others break the HIPAA rules. So it becomes very hard to share information out of fear of breaking HIPAA.
So where does that leave us?
So there's one loophole, you can say, or path in the HIPAA law that a lot of new healthcare tech companies trying to fix this problem are looking at, and that's the patient. You always, as a patient, are allowed access to your records. So if you are porting the record from hospital to hospital, that's a nice way around the law. The problem with that is it might not be great for patients, and it might not be great for society. And when I write a patient's chart, I might have to comment on that patient in a way that would be extremely helpful to other doctors taking care of
them. But you don't necessarily want them.
But I can't have them read it.
Slightly paranoid. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. If I know the patient's going to read that, I can't really describe what I need to describe to help that patient.
And then speaking of paranoid, almost a quarter of all data breaches in America happen in healthcare. So you've got that whole problem of supposedly private data that's being shared. A third party could steal it.
Yeah, for sure.
Another recent announcement, Blue Star is an FDA-approved app that helps diabetes patients manage their health with individualized guidance on blood glucose, medications, and lifestyle, such as food, sleep, and exercise. Do things like that help, just by giving more information?
I think so. I think that's a really exciting area because we know patient compliance is such a huge problem, especially for chronic diseases, diabetes, hypertension. If we get patients to live healthier lives, we can do a lot better, especially in the U.S. We're actually not that great in the U.S. for preventative medicine. So any tools that might be able to actually help patient compliance, I think will be great.
Sweden aims to give all of its citizens electronic access to their medical records by 2020. So that's just a couple of years away. Is that general concept a good one?
I don't think it is, but I'm curious and interested and I'm excited to watch it. And if another country is going to do it before us, let's see. Let's see how it looks and how it shakes out. But for all the reasons we talked about, I would be worried.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Meggs.
We're speaking with Dr. Joe Habush, an emergency room doctor, also an entrepreneur who runs a company that helps doctors with data and medical diagnostics. Joe, we haven't talked about the elephant in the room, which is the big debate over healthcare has been Obamacare. Are you concerned that despite all of these advances in medicine, that there's less access to healthcare now than there used to be?
Yes, that concerns me. We are great in the U.S. at driving forward innovation. We overpay for healthcare, and that pays for the innovation in the U.S. and around the world. And we should continue paying for that innovation. We're a rich country and we can afford it. And that's why I wouldn't go toward a single payer system. That said, universal healthcare is so important. And Obamacare was, in my view, a great step toward universal healthcare without squashing our drive of innovation.
So are American consumers subsidizing the healthcare of everyone else?
I think we are, and I think we should. We should lead in this way. This is a good, for liberal reasons, I think we shouldn't go toward a single payer system, and we should continue overpaying for technology.
Another thing we're seeing, outside of all the controversies of the government's role in healthcare, is huge businesses now starting to step into this space and saying something's not working right, we should get involved. So we have, of course, you know, the big announcement that brought together JP Morgan, Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway to give their employees medical care, but maybe also do some experimental work on what works and coming up with a system that might be rolled out to other people. So they're just kind of giving up on the existing system, say we can do a better job ourselves?
Maybe. If you look at the history of these large companies coming into healthcare, they've not always done great. You know, about 10 years ago, Google had a big push in healthcare and they gave up on it. Revolution Health, Steve Case's project, same idea. I think there's a certain amount of bravado that these tech companies bring when they disrupt industries that is very successful for them. But that same bravado can sometimes make them not see the specific aspects of different industries, especially healthcare, where there's such specific things that you have to understand and respect. And you see this all the time. Oh, doctors just don't like tech, or hospitals are slow, or they just haven't caught up. There's probably reasons for that. And dismissing it is dangerous and probably leads to their failure. So what I've seen is these big tech companies try, have failed, and then blame healthcare for it instead of trying to engage it. Will these guys be successful or not? I hope they're successful, but we'll see.
Are doctors overpaid in America?
We're not paid enough. Not paid enough. It's a hard question to ask. I don't know.
Because certainly a lot of specialists are paid far more in this country than they are in a lot of other prosperous countries.
Yeah, doctors are paid a lot more in general. I think the difference between different doctors is inappropriate often. And the doctors who get paid the most do the most and figure out how to profit off a few procedures. And that's probably not a great system. But doctors only represent 10% of our whole healthcare cost. So even if we think they're overpaid, it doesn't solve the problem of healthcare. Just to put it into perspective, if we cut doctor salaries in half, which would be impossible, it would only reduce the cost of healthcare by 5%.
So what's the largest percentage of cost for healthcare if it isn't doctors' salaries?
Right. So the common ones that people think are big that aren't are doctor's salaries, 10%, pharmaceuticals, about 11 to 14%, depending on how you count it. So both of those, if you cut them in half, would do a lot of damage without doing a lot of good to save costs. The biggest costs are infrastructure, hospitals, long-term care facilities. They can represent up to half of healthcare. And that's why a lot of potential savings are avoiding admissions, doing things as an outpatient.
All of these data innovations we've been talking about, is one of the potential upsides fewer medical mistakes? Because medical mistakes have been blamed for as many as 400,000 deaths annually in the United States.
Oh, for sure. And that's what they've been blamed for. And there's probably more because we don't.
Really, I have a hard time believing. I have a hard time believing that. I mean, doesn't it depend how you count a death? I mean, if somebody's in intensive care with congestive heart failure and they get one treatment that's marginally not quite as good as another treatment, is that, and they die in 2 weeks instead of 2.5 weeks? I mean, is that a death caused by a physician? I know there's a lot of mistakes, but I just have a hard time believing that people, healthy people, are walking to the doctor and getting killed off, you know,
that's
at that rate.
Such a great point. We have to keep in mind, saving a life isn't equal to saving a life, right? I could save someone's life because their heart stopped and bring them back and they're intubated and just like they were before, and the next day they die. And that's totally different than a person who has a full life in front of them, right? Mm-hmm. And medical mistakes, the math can fall into exactly what you're saying there.
So there are a lot of gray areas. A
lot of gray areas, right? But to your point, there are medical mistakes, and we are constantly looking for ways to reduce the chances of medical mistakes. And some of them are bad judgment, but some are just mistakes. Like, we didn't know that this patient had this, or we gave the wrong medication at the wrong dose. So one area of potentially improving that is in clinical decision support in electronic health records. So in its infancy, if I order aspirin for you and you're allergic, hey, Dr. Joe, they're allergic to aspirin. Don't order that. In a more sophisticated version is what an area I work in. MD Calc has these rubrics or clinical decision tools that help the doctor make decisions.
Can you explain how MD Calc works?
Yes, I'll do my best.
Good.
So we have 350 scores across all these different specialties. One score that came out about a year or two ago predicts your risk of having a heart attack and will help guide what type of preventative medication, typically cholesterol medication, you should be on. So that it has a whole bunch of inputs that the doctor can put in your age and your family history and whatever else. And through that will tell them your chance of having a heart attack in X number of years. And there's guidance on what kind of medications they can give. So it gives them some information that's objective. And then they can apply that information to that unique person in front of them. Now, we didn't make that score. That was made through a bunch of different academic physicians. And doctors typically come to us knowing we need to use that specific score, and MD Calc's a place to look for it. But something we created about a year ago that more the younger doctors are starting to use is they come to us not knowing if a score exists, and we have tools where they can present the clinical scenario and see which tools exist and then read really quick synopses of these tools by experts to see how to apply them best in front of them. So they can sort of start with MD Calc while before they were starting with, I need this XYZ score.
Yeah. So where does your money come from?
And this is part of the reason we've never taken outside funding or sold the company. We want to keep it very pure. Our business model right now is to sell advertising, and the advertising on our website looks like advertising. Content that looks like content is not influenced by advertisers.
Let's bring this baby home, Joe. Home healthcare. Can advances in technology with smaller devices and wireless technology improve care in the home and get some people who might be going to the hospital treated by doctors in their homes?
Yeah, we've been seeing a lot of this over the past decade. especially with chronic diseases that bring patients in a lot. I'll give you an example. Congestive heart failure is a pretty common and dangerous chronic disease. And patients who don't take their medications correctly or don't eat the right things or have a worsening of their disease will suddenly have water back up into their lungs. It's called pulmonary edema. It's uncomfortable.
It's the same thing that kills mountaineers on Everest.
Yeah, for a different reason. That's right. So they come in very sick to the hospital, often get admitted with water in their lungs. We're giving them strong medications to get it off the lungs and to have to intubate them sometimes. If we just knew 12 hours before that they weren't taking their meds, or if we weighed them and saw that their water was building up or looked at their lungs, we could prevent all this. And so there's a lot of tools and companies that are looking to do that, monitoring either the weight or the lungs or something else so that they can predict it earlier on and prevent these admissions.
Because one of the things I really like about what you're saying is that these all of these advances in data and technology won't replace the doctor, but actually might allow more room for care as opposed to an impersonal healthcare system where you're treated by a machine.
Are there fewer accountants or investment bankers because Microsoft invented Excel? We can do so much more with Excel, but that just makes them more efficient and more accurate.
And we've done a number of shows actually on this question and what will the impact of widespread automation be? And, you know, it's not necessarily as dire as people think. If you allow people to do their jobs better, that doesn't mean you're going to necessarily eliminate jobs, but you might improve the performance of that job. So certainly an accountant who's not spending 6 hours a day entering figures into some big paper spreadsheet and is able to scroll through a whole bunch of Excel files. I mean, we take it for granted now, but think of the massive improvement in efficiency and more time to focus on what's really going on with their clients. So you're seeing something similar like that in healthcare coming down the pike.
I think that's exactly right. And I think that's even more right when you look at the expert in any field versus support of that expert. So maybe the bookkeeper, they don't need to hire as many bookkeepers because that's automated. Maybe there's going to be less truck drivers because of self-driving cars.
And there's actually one study, and it may or may not pan out, that argues that there won't be fewer truck drivers because there will still be a lot of functions that we need, but we'll have more efficient trucking. I don't know.
And that might be.
Remains to be seen.
Before we go, what is your biggest hope or hopes for change and improvement in our healthcare system? Take time to think about that.
Yeah. I think the American healthcare system does amazing things and has for decades. We drive healthcare innovation for the world. Because, like we said earlier, we overpay for it. Whether or not it's a pharma company in Germany or Japan, they're selling to the American market. That is very valuable. What we weren't good at was spreading healthcare across our system. Obamacare was a great step in the right direction toward universal care. My hope in the short to medium term is that we don't take any steps backwards in these spaces. We continue driving healthcare innovation forward, and we also continue toward universal care.
So you're saying first, do no harm.
First, do no harm. And I mean that politically. And yeah. I mean that on both sides of the political spectrum. I think the current administration can sometimes be short-sighted. And I also would equally be fearful if there is an overly liberal backlash to that and we go toward a single-payer system. I think that we would lose out that way.
And when you say, so you're in favor of Obamacare, but you're against a single payer system. What's wrong with the single payer system?
Everyone who pushes for a single payer system argues about how we can save money by paying less, and they're almost always talking about technology. It becomes too much of a target for a single payer system to reduce the cost of things that end up reducing the engine that drives innovation. And we can criticize that engine because there's so many areas to criticize. Pharma companies, medical device companies, they find loopholes, they do funny things, but it is the only engine that has driven healthcare innovation forward for 100 years. Look how people lived 60 years ago, their life expectancy, the difficulties they had, and compare it to today. We have to look at the long term. People will forget that if they go toward a single payer system.
Dr. Joe Habush, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me again.
I'm going a little bit Donald Trump on you here in saying that the rest of the world should also pay up. And I'm not thinking of developing countries, but there are plenty of wealthy nations that could help spend more for medical research. And that's not happening.
That's a really interesting point. He's got such an interesting perspective on it. In some ways, it might be an artifact of the way that the U.S. was later to the table in bringing the federal government into managing healthcare, managing costs. So yes, we pay more, but on the other hand, all these other countries that drove down their cost of healthcare, they did it partly by being a little parasitic on the U.S. economy, especially countries that somehow managed to negotiate these drug prices that are a fraction of what we pay. If the whole world worked that way, we wouldn't all pay less for drugs. We'd have fewer new drugs. So I kind of agree with them. I mean, it's not a great setup, but we're a wealthy country. And if a drug comes in to the U.S. at a very, very high price, within a few years, it's all over the world at a much lower price and saving lives. It's not a great system, but it's better than the alternative.
I'd also like us to become a more caring society. And I love this idea that data doesn't replace the doctor, that it could actually lead to longer doctor-to-patient moments.
I hope so. You know, I think there's some evidence it might work that way. I happen to be part of a healthcare network where when I go in to see any specialist, they already have all my charts. And it's great. There's a lot less time giving them some kind of half-baked record. Sometimes they'll notice things on my record that I've forgotten about, you know? And so it's helpful if let's say I've got knee pain or something, if that specialist has all that information at his or her fingertips. And then they spend a little more time talking about the knee pain and not when did I have, you know, measles or something. But clearly there's so much going on as technology, especially our ability to collect and manage massive amounts of data. This is the industrial revolution of our time. The collection and management use of data. And that's going to have huge impact on healthcare, and I think almost entirely for the good, but there are certain risks we have to watch and manage.
It's How Do We Fix It? I'm Richard Davies.
And I'm Jim Mace.
And our producer is Miranda Schaefer. Music is by Lou Stravinsky. We're a production of Davies Content. We make digital audio for companies and nonprofits. And check out our website, daviescontent.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.